FM KMOX. Happy Tuesday to everybody. I'll tell you what, Andrew set me up on this show. This is my show to fail. We'll be talking to Mike Farron, who, are you a buddy of his?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, we're good buds.
Who is a baseball guy who's going to know a great deal about the Arenado trade. Then at 2 p.m., Hall of Fame tight end Jackie Smith, my new best friend, is going to be here live. I'm really looking forward to seeing him again. Brad Young is always great. Kurt Barr and Daniela Velasquez are going to be here for the think tank. So, yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
It's a heck of a lineup.
I can only fail.
I mean, that probably won't happen.
So I know that a lot of our listeners have been listening to the Arenado coverage on Gas House Gang, but mm-hmm. there are going to be a number of people who just come into the DGS because, hey, it's 1 o'clock, and who are still baseball fans. So let's just do a little primer on what's going on, and then we'll talk to your friend Mike at 1:30.
Yeah, so we've been waiting for a little bit more than a calendar year now, right? To see if they've been able to trade Nolan Arenado. They started pursuing it last year. You remember he did not accept the trade to Houston last year. And it wasn't a rejection. It was more of a, I'm not sure yet. I don't want to say yes. And then the Astros were like, fine, we're moving on. And they did something else. So that really kind of stalled everything for last year. And his list apparently was a little shorter last year. There was word that he was going to be more flexible this year. Given that, you know, look, he's 34. The Cardinals are in a full rebuild. That's not appealing to a guy that's going to be nearing the end of his career, who's going to be a Hall of Famer, too, by the way. So getting him to Arizona accomplishes a bunch of things. One, it gets him to a team that's competitive, and it's a team out west, so he's a California guy, but spring training for all the California teams is in Arizona. He can stay in Arizona year-round for spring training and to live there as a player, so there's a lot of draw to that. And again, it's a good team that expects to contend for a playoff spot. The Cardinals, what the benefits are for the Cardinals are three things, right? One is you're clearing playing time for younger players. That is to me, that's probably the number one goal. The second goal is to save as much money as you could. So they saved $11 million of what they owed Arenado. They're going to be paying the rest of what they owe him for the next 2 years, which it depends on how it's all being done in the math. The reports were that they're paying 31 of the $42 million that he's owed, but the Rockies still pay five, so maybe it's only 26 that they're paying. But either way, they're basically paying two-thirds of what he's owed, three-quarters of what he's owed, but saving $11 million. And saving that money is going to matter in some way, shape, or form. And then you're getting a prospect return, and they did not get a top prospect. Nobody expected them to. But they got a guy that's interesting. He was an eighth-round pick last year. He's not pitched as a pro yet, but he pitched at Arizona State. And this is why I reached out to Mike Farron. Mike, in addition to being the midday host on MLB Network Radio covering Major League Baseball, he used to be the Matt Pauly of the Arizona Diamondbacks doing pre- and post-game. So he knows the Diamondbacks inside and out. And he does college baseball. And he has seen Jack Martinez, and that's how you pronounce it, by the way. It looks like Martinez. His name is Martinez. He's seen him pitch in person, so I figured Mike would be a good guy to break it all down.
As you're talking, and I'm thinking back on Aki, what he was talking about in on the Gas House Gang, it's weird to me, maybe you can help me out, it's weird to me that a future Hall of Fame third baseman, the Rockies paid like $50 million to get rid of him. We're paying $31 million to get rid of him. Yeah. That feels weird.
It is. And it's, and well, look, the part of the problem with the Diamondback, I'm sorry, starting with the Rockies, he signed a big deal with the Rockies, right? This is a long-term deal. His expectation was that they were going to continue to try to put a winning team out there, because when he had signed it, they were coming off a good year, and then they failed to do that. So he said, I want out. And at that point, the only way the Rockies were going to be able to move the contract, given his age, and his performance hadn't slipped very much. It was a little bit, but he had some injuries, but it wasn't that. It was people seeing the age and the length of the deal and saying, hey, listen, we're not going to eat all of that. That's part of the price of getting out of a deal that has gone south for you in one way or another. And the Rockies one went south because essentially they ticked Arenado off by not continuing to put together a quality team. And so you're going to have to pay a tax on that, essentially, and that's what that was. So, again, they paid $50 million, or you know they're going to continue to pay it, but they actually saved $200 million by doing that. And the Cardinals are going to pay some of this, but they're saving $11 million of what they're committed to. And it also, now if you were not trying to do a rebuild, if you were not trying to clear more playing time and more at-bats for young players, you probably wouldn't do it. You'd probably keep the player and pay him and get his good defense and deal with the offense. But when you're trying to accomplish the goal of playing time for young guys, well, it doesn't make sense to have a guy who's playing towards the end of his career taking up that time.
Man, it seems like the Diamondbacks are getting a great deal.
They are. They're getting Arenado for, I don't remember the exact split, but they're spending, I think, $6 million this year and $5 million next year. So you're spending for Arenado what it costs to have a part-time player.
It's only like $5 million more than I'm spending. I mean, I could take out a loan and cover that.
And this is why going back to last offseason, we talked about this is what it was going to take. You know, when you're talking about a player in decline, teams are not going to want to spend starter money on someone. Now to them, if he doesn't play well and they want to make him a part-time player, well, you're paying him like a part-time player, which is the attraction. But paying it down to the way that you did is part of why you actually got a prospect who has some ability, right? He's not a top prospect, Martinez, but you're getting a right-handed pitcher fresh out of college who hasn't pitched an inning in the pros yet who throws 97 miles an hour. So if you were going to ask them to pay more, you would have gotten less in return. So there's always that sliding scale.
Is this guy a starter or reliever?
He's a starter now. At least he was in college. We'll see. He's got a really funky delivery. There are scouts that think he might be a reliever because he doesn't have great command right now.
Yeah.
But the Cardinals are revamping their pitching development. They've brought in the guys, a guy named Matt Pierpont, who was with Seattle. Seattle's been one of the best organizations in baseball the last 4 or 5 years developing pitchers. And if you can make some slight changes, if you can get him on the right track, maybe he's a starter. But if he's not, you stick him in the bullpen and you see if 97 to 100 plays in the bullpen.
Yeah.
You know?
I, as a fan, just as Dave, if you guys listen to the show all the time, you go along with me on all my, I bought 23 baseball gloves and this kind of stuff. And you know that I've been a lifelong Cardinals fan, but I was out, you know, I was casual for 5 or 10 years there in the mid-aughts. But it coincided with me coming back, getting on KMOX, going to all the games, getting way back into it, coincided with Arenado and Goldschmidt getting here. And so to me, I will just like always be emotional about him.
Yeah.
Like when he comes back, I'll be there.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I tweeted about this earlier, and I'll just do a shorter version of it. It sucks that it ended the way that it did because you went out and got a Hall of Fame player, and now he gave you a couple of Hall of Fame caliber years, right? The first 2 years were awesome. Year two, especially. Year two was one of the best seasons a Cardinals third baseman has ever had. And, you know, finished third in the MVP. Goldie won the MVP that year. And it just became a steady decline after that. It's the most likely thing is just age, because the one thing that's great about Arenado, well, there's a lot of things, but the one thing I love the most about him is how hard he works.
Oh, yeah.
That man cares. And there's never going to be a criticism of him, of anything going wrong with him because he didn't put in the work.
No.
In fact, he might have overworked at times.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of player you want. It's the kind of player you root for. It's the kind of player that fans root for. So the problem is the organization's just not in a spot to benefit from that.
Brian M. has a question. You can read their wheels, which I think a lot of people will have this question. And I know you have an answer.
Yeah.
He said, the deal just doesn't make sense to me other than just getting Arenado off the roster. We still have to pay $20 million a year to get rid of him and only get a minor league pitcher.
Well, it's not 20 a year. It's 21 total for 2 years. So it's 11 a year. I'm sorry, 31. No, so it's 15 and a half a year. It's $31 million total. And I think it's actually 26, so whatever. But it's 26 over 2 years. Not that that really changes the point of what Brian's getting to. The problem is having him here holds back other players. It's that simple. You need to play J.J. Weatherholt in the infield. You need to play Nolan Gorman. You need to play Thomas Tejasi. You've already got Mason Winn. You've got Alec Burleson playing some first base. Maybe Herrera plays some over there, too. Those players have to play because this is a full rebuild. So if this year goes badly for Gorman, it's probably the end of Gorman in St. Louis. If it goes badly for Jordan Walker, it might be the end of Jordan Walker in St. Louis.
Just as a non-expert fan, as I understand it from listening to you guys, it's that the players who are going to play next year maybe here playing in 3 years.
Right.
Arenado will not.
He will not be.
And it would be a waste of his talent and a waste of his ability to win a championship. So it works.
Well, there's part. That's a good point. There's a second part to it. There's the team need, which is playing time for all these guys that they're trying to find out more about for the long term. But it also is doing right by a player that you have admiration for. So the team is looking at it and saying, well, it doesn't really help us in the short term to have him because we're not going to be good. And that's not good for him because this may be the very end of his career. So if he can go to a place that's better and have a chance to make the playoffs, and once you're in the playoffs, have a chance to make a run, that's better for the player as well. And geographically, this is better for Arenado too. He's from Southern California. That means, and you know, Arizona's not that far from Southern California, but it's also where all the California teams have spring training. And some non-California teams, too. So he's going to be spring training and regular season in the same city. He doesn't have to have two places like people who are in the Florida State League. I'm not the Florida State League, the Grapefruit League down in Florida for spring training. So you get the convenience of always being at home. There are a lot of tax benefits to being in Arizona. Probably gets him a little extra, you know, take-home pay being in Arizona as opposed to here, because I don't think they have state income tax in Arizona.
And as I understand it, this the overall rebuild is that we're not going to be competitive for the division next year unless there's some crazy flyer and someone makes a movie of us. But the next year after that, and certainly the third year, we could be competitive, and that's when the DeWitt starts spending money big leaguers.
That's when you start either extending your guys and spending money to keep players around, or you're going out and getting new ones, maybe making another Arenado trade, maybe making another Goldschmidt trade. You could get into free agency. It's never been this ownership's style to do the deep dive in free agency. They're more likely to trade for contracts because it's you're not negotiating the unknown.
Yeah.
Right? Like you look at the Bregman contract. Boston thought that the other offers being brought to that the other offers for him were not serious, and they found out the hard way that they were serious, and it was a number that they probably weren't comfortable with.
Yeah.
So that's the Cardinals have never had a big, big push in free agency, but it doesn't mean they won't in the future. It just means that it opens you up to going out and doing it in any number of ways. Yeah. And in the short term, you're trying to find the players that will be inexpensive and young to build around, put those other guys around.
Yeah.
That's how you're going to be a good team in St. Louis.
Okay.
Now, it's got to work, but that's the play.
When we come back, we'll talk about something different. And then at 1:30, we'll talk to Mike Farron with MLB Network, a buddy of Wheels, who has some inside information since he has covered the Arizona area for so long and has watched this kid pitch a couple of times. Little update on my health, since you're going to have to suffer through hearing whatever aspects I have going on. This crazy thing that I have, it's now day 16. I was just telling the guys that I saw this doctor last night who said that it's probably a rhinovirus that's going around, that the symptoms are lasting up to 30 days in people. So I'm about halfway there. And the thing I have now, I've lost most of my symptoms, but I had that thing, everyone's had it, where you can't breathe very deep, like in the middle of my chest, it feels like there's a snow cone there. And if I breathe really deep, it's cold and makes me cough and stuff. So I'm just, you know, I'll be fine during the show. But if I cough, that's just what's going on. Go to sleep. Thank you. I think you broke the news here about Mike Tomlin. What's he stepped down? He's retiring?
I don't know about retiring. I think it's probably one of those mutual agreements.
Steelers?
Yeah.
Okay.
See, the Steelers have never fired a head coach. And I think
only three, right?
They've only had three in their entire history, and they've never fired one, so I don't think they wanted to set that precedent, so they probably just agreed that he would step down.
Gotcha.
And I'm sure I'd be shocked if he doesn't have another job in the next couple of weeks.
For sure.
Yeah, if he wants it. He may not, but if he does, I'm sure he'll have one.
Can I tell you about a discrimination I have? That's always popular. I can't stand the coach or former coach of the Miami Dolphins based solely on how he looks.
Mike McDaniel?
Yes.
Mike
McDaniel. I know nothing about his abilities. I know nothing about his resume.
I just
don't like the way he looks.
You don't like his glasses?
He just looks goofy. He just, like, we're all products of our childhood. I grew up with Tom Landry, you know, on the side with the suit and the hat and the whole thing. And I don't know.
Well, nobody does that anymore.
Oh, I know. I know.
And I was watching Mike Vrabel, the coach of the Patriots, on the sidelines during their game on Sunday. What a goofball. He'll set the play chart on the ground and like bend over real far at the waist to read it. He looks so weird. Every time they would cut to him, he was doing something weird.
Have you guys seen the story about the Havana effect, the Havana device?
Yes.
Do you know about this, Rach?
I saw that they might have a Havana effect weapon at the Pentagon.
Yeah. So I first heard about this a few years ago, when some of our diplomats had this effect where they got sick and they were dizzy and they couldn't stop throwing up. And we thought that one of the bad guys,
Russia,
had used some sort of a device to cause this. They called it the Havana device. And now it's being widely reported. First of all, a guard in Venezuela gave a statement after we invaded and said, oh, my God. And it was really interesting talking about, we've never seen aircraft like this. We've never seen accuracy like this.
Never seen soldiers like this.
Never seen soldiers like this. It was like science fiction. And then they said that everyone in that group started getting an absolutely beyond pounding headache. Their noses started bleeding. They were disoriented. They were passing out. They were throwing up blood. Sounds a lot like this device. And now it's being widely reported by all the major outlets that we paid over $10 billion for one machine that fits in a bag. And that's what it is. And while it's not completely Russian parts, it's mostly Russian parts. But what a weird world we're living in.
Yeah. I always assume that all of that tech exists. You know, I mean, you see some of this stuff get written about in books and stuff. And everybody who knows anything about technological development believes that, you know, the whether it's DARPA or whatever other crew, but the U.S. government is probably 20 years ahead of where you think we are.
I would assume that.
Yeah.
I've always assumed that.
Yeah. I mean, they were on all these things, right? When you think about the stealth bomber and all that, I mean, they had that for 15, 20 years before they ever acknowledged that they had it. You know, I mean, yeah, there would be these weird sightings and people like, what is that UFO? And that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it wouldn't be shocking to me. And that's not even that far ahead, right? Like, it's not like that's not like 20 years in the future, because Russia's been using something like it for years, at least allegedly.
Did you guys see the little kid hockey fight?
Yes.
No.
So it's pretty cute, but it's become controversial now. How old were the kids?
Eight.
And they go at it, man. It's like a brawl. Everyone's matching up. Everyone's fighting everybody else. It goes on for over a minute. The crowd's going crazy, and they're applauding. And one of the goalies comes flying through and just clocks this kid and puts him on his ass. And now people are like, what the hell's wrong with you? These are eight-year-old children with blades in their feet. Stop them. Get in there and stop them from fighting. And other words, they're like, it's hockey. This is what we do.
I mean, I guess at what age are you able to graduate into hockey fights?
Well, I can tell you guys, you're not even allowed to check at that age. You can't check players. I think you got to be 12 or 13 before you're even allowed to check players into the boards. So that would be a no contact age level.
So what was the... Okay, there's like a mascot on the ice at the same time?
It's one of those intermission things. It was at a minor league hockey game.
Yes.
Okay.
It was one of those, like, you know, in between. You'll see that at Blues games where the kids will come out and they'll do a little shootout or whatever. So it was something along, it was along those lines, which is why the mascot was out there on the ice.
So they were fighting during a halftime?
During what would be basically intermission entertainment.
Yeah, they were doing like a little expo game.
Yeah.
During the
And I saw somebody suggest that that might have been like rigged. Like that they decided they would just fight.
Okay.
I don't know that that's true. I just saw that was speculation. I think there are two levels to this. Okay. One, the coaches should have gotten out there and stopped it faster than they did. Nobody else can do anything about it. The referees are not there. The referees are in the locker room because they're getting ready for the second period, third period, whatever. It would be on the coaches to break it up, and they didn't do anything. But also, eight-year-old boys are stupid. We used to fight for fun for no reason, just in the backyard. I mean, it's not out of character for eight-year-old boys to do goofy stuff.
No, you can't blame the boys.
Right, right.
Yeah. WGS, 104.1 FM KMOX. Big Sports Day, actually, coming up at the top of the hour. Jackie Smith, only the third tight end to go into the NFL Hall of Fame, is going to be here live. Really excited to see him again. Right now we have Mike Farron, co-host of Power Alley on the MLB Network Radio, talking about Nolan Arenado. Mike, thanks for being here. Great to meet you, man.
How are you?
I'm doing great. You know what I'm going to do? It's my show, but I'm going to turn you over to my buddy Kevin Wheeler, and I'm going to sit back and listen to you two just go.
So you're going to listen to two loud gingers talking.
That's right. Take it over.
Yeah. Mike, obviously, you were the first guy I thought to reach out to when I saw the deal, because for our listeners that don't know you, you've worked with and around the Diamondbacks for years. You host on MLB Network Radio, so you and your partner, Jim Duquette, you're talking about major league moves and team moves every day. And you call college games on SiriusXM College Channel, and I know you two do a lot with college baseball. I wasn't sure if you had seen Jack Martinez, but that's why I texted you to find out. So I appreciate having your insight here. And I guess let's go in the order of big leagues first. Your evaluation, baseball guy, midday host on MLB Network Radio, of Arenado to the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was going to be tough to find a new home for Arenado this year because there was so much money left on the deal, and especially looking at the deal that he turned down to Houston a year ago, where the Cardinals would have gotten out of most of the money, it seemed like. So, he had a really down season, and his offense has been in decline the last 3 years. Arizona needs a third baseman. They got that money paid down to the point where it's, he's what, $5 million this year, $6 million next year.
Yep.
So they get a guy who's still a really good defender. They value defense, and that's certainly what Arenado still brings to the table. And he's a tireless worker, and I know you guys know, like, just a class act all the way around. So I think from that standpoint of Arizona's needs and probably some of their financial restrictions, Arenado made sense for them. And, the bar at third base right now isn't all that high to be an average offensive player. I mean, the last 3 years, the position has been below average league-wide.
Yeah.
So, if he can bounce back a little bit, I think they're going to be happy with it. But he still has a home in Scottsdale. He spent a lot of time here. There's a lot of respect for him inside the Diamondbacks organization. I think from Arenado's standpoint, and being in a team that's going to compete in the division, I think it checks a lot of boxes for him in giving him an opportunity to finish his career in a spot that he's comfortable.
I listen to you guys on the drive in almost every day, and you have Torrey Lovello on, who's the manager of the Diamondbacks, on a weekly basis during the season. And I hear Torrey say a lot of things that have been said by a lot of Cardinals people over the years about their dedication to solid defense, and they want all-around ball players. They don't tend to be short on that side, but it sounded like last year he was not totally happy with all of their defense.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that was a thing that happened early in the season where their defense was a little bit more shaky than what they have expected. Listen, they don't have a whole lot of margin for error, right? Like, they are, of the five teams in that division, they are probably the least moneyed, even though Phoenix is the top 15 market. I mean, it just speaks to the NL West doesn't get talked about in that same way, but the Dodgers are obviously a huge market. The Giants are a huge market. The Padres are pulling in so many fans right now that they're a revenue sharing payor. Denver's a huge market where they draw. So like they have to try and find these little advantages here and there. And when they've been at their best, they've had a dynamic offense that's taken advantage of the ballpark, which is really good for doubles and triples. It's not a homer haven since they put in the humidor there. That's impacted the home runs. But they have to play good defense and run the base as well. And Nolan is obviously one of the greatest defenders of third base of all time. So I think that's an upgrade for them for sure. I think that there are probably some other spots. I mean, they're still, I think, looking for a right-handed hitter who can play some first and DH, which actually might lead them to a reunion with Paul Goldschmidt. That's been one of the rumors out here.
Yeah.
The Cardinals' last great corner infield could end up in Arizona together, right?
So yeah, super interesting. All right, so you are certainly the only person that I know that has seen Jack Martinez in person. So for our Cardinals fans, Jack Martinez is the prospect coming in. It's spelled Martinez, pronounced Martinez. He played at Arizona State last year. You're based in Phoenix, and you call college games. Yeah. So you've seen Jack in person. Just tell us what you've seen.
Yeah. fact, I had him on an ESPN2 game last year against Texas Tech. And he's, yeah, so good story, right? Like, he started at Trinity, which is a Division III school in Texas, and then transferred to Louisiana Lafayette, where his sophomore year he was a closer and then transferred to ASU. They put him in the rotation. It's a four-pitch mix. I love his changeup. I thought it was the best changeup of anybody I saw that was draft eligible last year in college. It's a real weapon. And it's not like he's short on fuzz either. I mean, he'll touch a 97.
Okay.
He's got a couple of breaking balls. It is a really funky delivery. And I think that's one of the reasons why he probably lasted in the eighth round, is that there is a lot of reliever risk with him. There's always reliever risk with any pitcher, but just because it's not like the smoothest operation, but also I think that adds to his deception.
Sure.
I have some questions as to whether or not he ends up being a starter long-term. I'll tell you what, if they end up with a big leaguer out of him, even if it's just for a little bit or an up and down, I think it's a pretty heck good return for what they got. And I think he's got a chance to do that, but he's an intriguing arm. I know he's a guy that the Cardinals liked in the draft last year, just didn't line up for them to be able to take him. He's super competitive. And I think he's going to be a lot of fun. I would think that he probably gets to AA relatively quickly. I would not pay much attention to his ERA totals last year. The walk rate was a little high, but the ERA total was high too. The pitching at Phoenix Muni, which is where ASU plays their home games, is like pitching on the surface of the moon.
Oh.
So Wheels had 8 homers there last year and didn't even play. So, like, I think it's really good stuff. And it's, like, when I saw his name come across, that's what the trade was. I was like, all right, the Cardinals did really well in this.
Nice. Guys, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Mike Farron from MLB Network. Arenado has been traded to the Diamondbacks for a big right-hander. So, Mike, Bernie Miklas has a source that says, and it makes sense, that if Brendan Donovan stays, he'll play second, and J.J. Weatherholt will play third. If he goes, Weatherholt will play second. Gorman will be penciled in at third. Just overall, with the guys it looks like we're going into 2026 with, who on the Cardinals roster intrigues you?
J.J. Weatherholt intrigues the heck out of me. I mean, I thought he was the best player in the draft when they took him 2 years ago. I think whether it's second or third base, I don't think, like, J.J. Weatherholt is ball player, right? Like, I don't care where they put him. I think he's going to be a really good player. I think he is an above average major leaguer. In terms of the other guys that intrigue me, I actually think it's a pretty intriguing roster. I don't know, like, I should probably ask you guys. I think there's this perception that the Cardinals are going to be really bad. I don't think that's the case. I think they're probably more in that, like, 75 to 78 win range just on paper, because they have a number of young guys who have had some success in the big leagues and some guys who are ready to take another step forward. So the list of guys that intrigue me is really long. I'm a huge Mason Wynn fan. I think he's one of the better shortstops in the National League. I think he's a great defender. I think he's a really good down lineup hitter. I profess my love for Weatherholt. I'm really interested to see what happens with Victor Scott II. I think what we saw early in the season shows that there's more in the tank for him than what the final line looked like. I think Alec Burleson is a really good hitter. I don't know that he's going to have the elite power you want out of a first baseman, but I think he's a fun player. And I don't know how you can look at this roster and not be, you know, wondering what's going to happen with Jordan Walker. So there's that.
Yeah.
And then, like, we're doing our Cardinals team audit tomorrow, and our player breakdown is Ivan Herrera, who I think quietly for most people put together a heck of a season last year. If he can catch, in addition to providing the offense that he did last year, even with kind of middling power, that's a really good player. So I think there's a lot of things to be excited about with this Cardinals group, even though the expectations, rightfully so, are pretty low.
Yeah, I agree with your assessment, Mike. I mean, yeah, you've subtracted some guys. I mean, Wilson Contreras probably the most consistent of those guys, and even he was a little up and down. Sonny was up and down, but Sonny's also mid-30s. It's not really that big of a deal. And he had a home road split that was really weird while he was here, just did not have success on the road. But when you're looking at the pitching overall, this is where I'd come down on it. I'd be curious to what you see on it, is to me the rotation can't be worse because you moved on from 3 of the worst starting pitchers in baseball last year. I mean,
it can always get worse. I mean, don't it can always get worse.
I guess,
like,
you're right.
I think, you know, Libertor and McGreevy both showed, I think, enough signs that can give you a little bit of hope. So I think that's one. I know his walk totals were crazy high last year, but I'm a big Quinn Matthews fan.
Yeah.
I loved him at Stanford, and I think he's, you know, he's another one of those fastball changeup guys with a high compete factor, and I think he's going to get it figured out. So, yeah, I mean, like, listen, there's a lot of uncertainty in the rotation, I think, because of youth, and there's probably not enough depth there, and that's what keeps them in the second division as much as anything. But there should be some growth from some of those guys, and if, you know, we came back at the end of this season and said, okay, well, now we know that McGreevy and Libertor are bona fide starting pitchers going forward, where, you know, and they don't necessarily need to be top of the rotation, right, but guys that you can count on, even if they're threes and fours or fours and fives, I think that's a really good building block to look for. And if somebody else takes a step into that mix, I think that's great. But a lot of the pitching development, and clearly from the deals that they've made, is going to be taking place down on the farm. And that's where, if you want to look for the next good wave of Cardinals pitchers, I would pay close attention to what's going on in Peoria and in Springfield in particular.
Mike, last thing I got for you is simply, since we're on the rotation and we didn't talk on the air about it, let our listeners know what you guys thought about the Dustin May signing. Obviously, the big outside ad with major league experience, real, because they added Richard Fitz, and, you know, they've added some other arms that have seen big leagues, but not like Dustin May.
Yeah, I mean, May, when he was healthy before he had, you know, the litany of arm injuries and then the really scary perforated esophagus that he had that cost him a good chunk of the 24 season. Like, he was a guy that seemed like he was ascendant towards an impactful starting pitcher. I think that is probably not where he's heading. I think he can be certainly a capable one. It's a little different operation, right? Because it's a heavy sinker with power stuff. It's kind of more old school Cardinals in that regard. And I'm sure that there are a couple of pitch mix things that they'd love to do to try and adjust with it. But you remember, he missed a ton of time and came back and pitched mostly healthy last year. And so if he can give them, you know, let's say up through the end of July, you know, 100 to 110 quality innings, I think that's really good. And he's exactly the kind of guy that a team that is, you know, building like the Cardinals are doing should be, you know, signing, because they put him in a position where, like, if he has a good first half, starting pitching is such a premium at the trade deadline that you're going to net, I think, really good prospects for somebody with his kind of stuff. So, you know, even if he doesn't pitch well, you should be able to flip him, because he has a pretty good pedigree and he's going to be one of those guys. Just like every person that we dated in high school thought they could fix us, I think every club feels like they could fix Dustin May. And so, you know, it's a little bit like, I guess Dustin May is a little bit, or at least teams are a little bit like my wife in trying to figure out exactly how to get me fixed. But he's way more talented than I am. So
that may be my favorite sports analogy of all time. We can all relate to that.
Yeah.
That's Mike Farron. Mike, thank you so much, man. Great stuff.
Yeah, my pleasure. Take care.
See you, buddy.
DGS 149. How friggin' great is AC/DC?
Pretty great.
Man, I'm telling you. They basically taught me to play drums. Like, just playing. AC/DC is just 4/4. Bant, bat, boot, bat. And just like playing that for hours on end. Man, magic. Great memories. Rach, add your name to the people who have some beef with Bill Maher.
Oh my gosh. It must be exhausting to be Bill Maher, because he is the smartest person on the planet and the rest of us are stupid. And that's his whole thing, right? Is like, I know everything. The rest of you are extremely stupid.
You know what? I was never into him. And then a couple years ago, I started watching his new television show and I got really into him. Mm. And then this season he soured on me. So,
well, he sucks.
At the Golden Globes, some celebrities were wearing pins that said "Be Good," and it was, you know, in memoriam to Renee Good, who was just shot and killed by an ICE agent in Minneapolis last week. Okay, who cares if they wear that pin? How does it affect your life in any way? Bill Maher is like, oh, they're so stupid for wearing that. This is so dumb. He's like laughing at them. So you're laughing that they want to honor a woman who was killed. She's dead now. And you think it's funny that people want to wear a pin?
New rule. No more pins at award shows. Well, shut up, dork.
And then apparently the reason he didn't win at the Golden Globes on Sunday night is because Hollywood is too woke.
Yeah.
It's not because his product isn't good enough. It's because everybody's too woke. So I don't know. It's just the kind of thing. I shouldn't even say anything because that's how he's popular. But just his whole like smarmy like, you're an idiot. It's like, dude, okay. Don't you ever like, do you ever doubt yourself for a second and think maybe you're not right? Maybe you're being a little bit of a jerk and maybe you should be quiet for a second.
I'm getting mad just thinking about
it. I guess not.
God, I hate Bill Maher so much.
I've always been mixed on him because there are some times where he makes good points and he's thinking about things in a neutral way as opposed to being super edgy. But then there are a lot of things about him you can just tell he's never had any checks or balances in his life.
Yeah, I think
the only
that's
opinion that matters
too,
in his world is his, and no, he doesn't have anybody else doing that. Whether it's a buddy or a spouse or whatever, and he gets a little bit too like, I am a dictator, and I get to say, well, on your show, you get to be. It's your show. But that doesn't mean that's the real world. So, I mean, I'm mixed on him. There are parts where I've gone, dude, just stop. And there are other times like, all right, that's a fair point. He's just a big fan of himself.
Yeah, and
again,
I guess
we
that's
all
why I'm
are,
tired of him.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's just like, dude, just take a breather, okay? And I think Wanda Sykes even said during the Golden Globe, she was like, you should try less hard. You should chill. And I think a lot of people are just, you just do the same thing over and over again. And like I said, it must be exhausting being correct and being so much smarter than everyone. That must be a horrible burden for him to bear. I feel so terrible for him.
Rach did something today. She doesn't even know I'm going to say this. That really brought back memories.
Hold on. Dave Hines says he's a stand-up comedian. This is what they do. Really? Do they all do that? They all act superior to everyone else?
I mean,
it's not
do,
about,
but...
like, to me, that's not comedy. What's the punchline? What was the punchline in any of that?
Yeah, also
he's
to address...
He's just acting superior to everyone.
To address that he's
it's
high
annoying.
On his show. Okay, that's not a plus. That's a very unprofessional and makes him even more hateable.
I mean, it is part of the bit.
What's the bit?
On his sideshow that they sit there and they either drink or smoke and they
kind
hang
the
out.
The whole bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, I've listened to Club Random. It's dreadful.
Yeah, that's...
It's the worst podcast I've ever heard.
But that is the bit. I mean, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I've never watched
no,
it.
No, you are right. Like, I've the whole clips. Time, Bill is so high that he's about to, like, fall asleep in his chair. And he's asking, like, the most boring, inane questions to, you know, David Spade or whatever.
Because he's high.
Who's going on, like, a super long, rambling answer that, again, Bill Maher is, like, drooling. He is so stoned.
I'm saying it's the bit. I don't get why it's a bit when someone's wearing a pin to show compassion for someone who has lost their life. How is it a bit to say, that's stupid. You guys are stupid. Who are you helping? Like, who are you edifying with that? What's funny about that? What's the point of that? I'm a radio show host. My whole thing is I get to say how I feel when these things play out in public. And I'm tired of that guy's whole thing. It's tired. He's a dinosaur. He should maybe reconsider his whole thing. It's just old.
Speaking of lapel pins, did you see that the president has a new one?
No,
I did.
It's of him.
It's him.
It's called Happy Trump, and it looks like Hey Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
Looks just like Hey Arnold, but he's been wearing the presidential pin, and right under it is a picture. It's a pin of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, if you look up any picture of him for like the past couple of days, you'll see it.
Why would you wear a pin of yourself?
I think you know.
Should I get one of me? Like, what would you think of me if I did that?
No less.
And what do you think? There's not much more to go down.
It would be kind of weird if you wore like a pin on your T-shirt. That would be interesting.
Yeah. Hey, it's a me thing.
I love the like, ooh, he's got more money than you. That must make him better. Shut up. Dork.
Man. Andrew, always fighting with the people on the stream.
Get a life.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk to Hall of Famer Jackie Smith from The Big Red.